US President Donald Trump is forcing General Motors to produce ventilators. The German Chancellor Angela Merkel now runs her own podcast. And the Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro still denies everything. My name is Martin Elkouri and this is the Good Governance Partnership. Hi everybody and welcome back to the Good Governance Partnership, and today again we are looking at the global status quo of the corona crisis. On this occasion I would like to thank each and everybody who has made this episode work. I reached out to so many people and almost everybody really replied on very short notice with videos, with voice messages, everything you can imagine, and this really helped us to make this episode work. So today what we are doing is we are providing first-hand impressions on how the corona crisis is affecting countries and individuals all around the world. And I would say this is just our way to contribute, basically, by providing an impression on the people's realities. Hopefully, today, together, we can send out the sign that the people of the world are united and that we are in this together. And I am optimistic that we are going to get out of this together as well. A brief roundup on the current situation. As of Monday, March 30th, 735,000 people worldwide have been infected with COVID-19. Almost 33,000 people have died, and these data are according to Johns Hopkins University, as all data that we are referring to in this video. The majority of confirmed cases right now is in the United States, with more than 144,000 people. By now, I think everybody has understood this challenge, this crisis, is unlike anything mankind has ever seen. It is a truly global challenge and probably the biggest challenge for all relevant aspects of our lives, and therefore as well for all aspects of governance. Healthcare systems all around the world are fearing to collapse. Some have already collapsed and some are at the verge of collapsing. The seemingly tireless world economy is coming to a halt, and for many people it feels like the clock stops ticking. And I would like to include myself here. But now, we all know that buying time is more important than ever before. And we are all united by the same problem, but what we can also see is that the strategies and approaches to solve that problem and the challenges that come along with it are completely different. This episode really is about informing you on how the situation looks like in different countries. And I would like to start by providing you with some information on the current situation in Germany before I hand over to my dear friends and colleagues all around the world. In Germany, 63,000 people have been infected with COVID-19. 541 people have died, and since Monday 23rd, the German government has applied strict rules of social distancing. However, there is no such thing as an official quarantine, at least not yet. And you are still allowed to leave your house with the people you live with, and you are also allowed to meet. You are also allowed to meet one additional individual. So, for example, if you would like to see a friend and take a walk, that is still possible if you keep the distance of 2 meters. The majority of Germans seems to adhere to these rules, with a few exceptions, and I think the good weather doesn't really help in this situation. However, some measures have been taken that are completely out of the usual. So after German Chancellor Merkel was in contact with an official 10 days ago who was diagnosed with corona, she has been quarantined, and she basically, aside from her government businesses in home office, she also contacted the people of Germany with a podcast. And she really urged us to stay at home, to respect the authorities and to remain patient and calm. And she prepared us that the restrictions that are in place right now will last for at least 3 more weeks. Why is that special? The German Chancellor, the office or the position of a German Chancellor, is not necessarily known for directly addressing the people so often. It's not like in the US where you have a regular State of the Union. I would say the tonality usually in Germany is different, and so I believe this step by Chancellor Merkel really also indicates how serious the situation is right now. Let's take a brief look at Germany's economic situation. So since this is a global crisis and almost all major companies in Germany are suffering from the simultaneous shock of demand and supply, of course the German economy is heavily struck by the coronavirus. However, I would even say that especially middle-class entrepreneurs are facing some serious challenges right now. But the German government really does everything to help. The federal government is supporting with benefits and loans and decided on a liquidity program, which amounts to approximately 156 billion euros. The German healthcare system is still stable. You can see that, for instance, in the media, Germany is accepting corona patients from Italy and from Spain. However, this is basically just a snapshot of today. You never know how this, if the situation deteriorates or not. And the government is investing heavily in expanding the already existing capacities of the health sector, especially considering that Germany is still at the early stages of this crisis. And important politicians and also our health minister has indicated that some serious steps have still to be taken in order to make sure that the capacities of the German healthcare system are not completely overwhelmed. Enough from Germany right now. Let's take a look on the situation in the United Kingdom, the country where the Global Diplomatic Forum is based. The UK, as of today, has approximately 20,000 infected cases and more than 1,200 people have already died. And the UK is a special one to a certain extent, because the British government has first pursued the strategy of herd immunity, and they have now completely changed their approach. The country is now on lockdown, and I spoke with Georgios Hadjipavlis on this matter yesterday.
Manchester. I normally live in London, but I had to pretty much leave because the situation was getting quite a bit, it was becoming quite uncontrollable. So I thought it was better to leave London. After I left, fortunately, I think the government took even harder measures. Last Friday, they announced that the pubs and the restaurants should all close down to the public. And then on Monday, they actually announced a partial lockdown of the country. So restrictions on freedom of movement, all public places, including libraries, places of worship had to shut down. And this was a big, big U-turn from what the UK government had actually announced in the beginning, which was basically herd immunity. So we'll see which option is right, because, you know, I mean, there's also the theorem that, you know, like the Spanish flu in the 1920s, you know, it might be the second or the third wave that gets to you, that's the one that's the most deadly and costly. So, you know, now with the lockdown scenario, we just have to hope that it's not going to return back to haunt us. So where I am, I just went out in the morning. Like every morning, it's actually quite chill, but there's a lot of consciousness. People are conscious on social distancing, as the Prime Minister said in his address. So even in the supermarket, you know, the queue was outside and it was like at least 3 meters between each person. So it's interesting, you know, the British way of doing things actually working. So that's a good thing, I'd say. So there's still a lot of workplaces open, and I think that's, you know, as the Prime Minister said, this is a free country. It's a liberal, democratic market economy. So a lot of workplaces are still open. People are still going to their jobs if it's necessary, if it's essential. If not, they still work from home, which I understand is increasingly hard, of course. But it's not as bad. And also the Chancellor of the Exchequer, he announced economic measures, so it's not looking that grave. But then again, we have to see. I mean, there's a lot of reports saying that there might be a financial downturn. So, but obviously, again, this is a pandemic, so we have to see all the psychological factors to kind of account for what's going to be the next day after this whole thing ends. So the general feeling is quite optimistic, I'd say. Yesterday we had this Clap for Heroes event, so everybody went out and clapped, or, you know, banged a few frying pans in support of our heroes in the front line, the members of the NHS, the doctors, the nurses, the ambulance operators. So it's quite cheerful, you know. It's a very British thing. It's like the Second World War, right? Everybody is very optimistic, very positive that we're gonna go over it. So, you know, everything is looking okay for the moment. The fire is on, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Special times and unparalleled challenges, not only in the United Kingdom. Cyprus, Georgia's home country, is witnessing some similar challenges right now. And while officially only 214 people have been infected with COVID-19 in the Mediterranean countries, the numbers are rising and the government has taken some serious steps. We had the opportunity to speak with Lisa Sokolovskaya, who is in Limassol right now.
I'm currently in Cyprus, in Limassol. We're on lockdown, which began on March 23rd and will end on April 13th. This decision is quite a radical one, but it definitely worth it because before that, we were encouraged to social distance ourselves, but it wasn't helping as much as the lockdown does. Currently, in order to go outside, we have to either send a text message or fill out a form where we indicate the reason why we're going outside. And we have such reasons as going to a supermarket, pharmacy, helping someone out. So basically the most urgent and like the emergencies that can occur. And we also have to carry our ID card or a passport with us. And all the other times we have to stay at home. They don't specify what specific amount of time we have, but they ask it to be reasonable. So people try to adhere to the rules from what I'm seeing. We have 160 cases and another two people have unfortunately passed away just on Friday. Overall, people do adhere to the rules. There are not that many people outside on the streets. The streets are in fact quite empty, which shows that the people are following what the government has issued. Hopefully it will allow the number of cases to go down and contain the virus as a whole. Regarding the economic situation, considering the restrictions on travel that have been introduced, there is no demand for all the tourist destinations here in Cyprus. All places for social gatherings are closed down now, so such businesses as restaurants and other are certainly experiencing losses. Such outcome of the pandemic has, however, been predicted by many. Cyprus government has introduced the suspension of repayment of loans bill, as well as some other policies. But this is a very challenging time for Cyprus. Overall, it feels very surreal. There is not much panic here, but it is quite sad to look at empty streets where you would normally see local citizens or tourists walking around. Currently, the most we can do is stay at home in order to contain the virus and hope that soon the situation will get better.
While Cyprus really is in the very early stages still, the situation in Spain looks entirely different. So as of now, approximately 85,000 people have been infected with COVID-19 and more than 7,000 people have already died. I had the chance to speak with Emma Rodriguez Montes about the current situation and the steps the government has taken.
So, hello, this is Emma Rodriguez. I'm currently living in Germany, although I've been following the Spanish news since the outbreak of the corona crisis because I'm Spanish and all my family and my friends are still there. So basically, I've been following the situation through the newspapers, the main ones in Spain, El País, El Mundo, and also, obviously, the news. The situation in Spain is of total lockdown to the point that the Prime Minister has even strengthened the restrictions this weekend, and he has announced that as of from next Monday, from tomorrow until the 9th of April, all businesses are going to be closed, apart from the essential ones. So in general, I think our groceries, pharmacies, transportation, communications, those are the few ones that they're going to be open, but everything else is going to remain, all businesses are going to remain closed until the 9th of April. That's applicable to the whole country. However, obviously the situation is much worse in Madrid and in Barcelona. In other places, like for example, where I'm from, which is Asturias, the north of Spain, it's one of the communities that fortunately has been less affected. Still, there are people that, many people that are infected, and there are several people that unfortunately have died, but not as many as in Madrid. Madrid by far is the place that is mostly overwhelmed with the situation and with the number of infected and diseased people.
Yeah, people seem to be very respectful about the measures taken by the government. And I asked Emma how the current economic situation looks like in Spain.
Regarding the economy in Spain, the situation is really not looking good at all. Spain is one of the countries with highest public debt in the European Union. And this new crisis is not going to make it any better. There are several discussions at the European level, obviously, where there have been two clear different groups of countries, the southern ones with France, Spain and Italy, and then on the other side, Germany and the Netherlands with completely opposed views on how to deal with the situation. But of course, the economy of countries like Spain and Italy is going to be very badly affected by this.
So the Spanish economy is also suffering. I have asked Emma about how the Spanish people are feeling right now. Is there some optimism left?
I think the general feeling in Spain is still relatively positive. There are tons of, again, videos and posts on all the social media, in the radio, in the news, in the newspapers, everywhere, about how great our health system is, how proud we are of our police, our armed forces, our doctors, our nurses, everything. So I think the general feeling is a little bit of community, in the sense like everybody is trying to fight this together. So everybody's trying to do their best. There are tons of private initiatives on how to make like masks and all the material that the hospitals are lacking right now. So I think still the feeling is, yeah, positive in terms of community, of trying to find this all together. Unfortunately, I don't think this is going to last much, much longer, because it has been already 2 weeks of total lockdown. Another 2 weeks are coming, and still we don't know what's going to happen after that. So it's not very clear that this is going to be the end of it. So I don't know if the feeling will stay so positive for the following weeks.
Now, while Spain is the second most affected country in Europe, let's take a look at Italy. In Italy, approximately 100,000 people have been infected with COVID-19, and almost 11,000 people have already passed away from this illness. That means that Italy really is leading on a global level. I had the chance to speak with Nicole Alberti. She lives in Germany but is from Rome, and she tells us about the measures taken by the Italian government.
I'm not talking to you right now from Rome, but my family and relatives live there and we keep contact every day, so I can tell you pretty exactly how the government is handling the situation and how people are facing the strict measure of the quarantine. Italy is since the 9th of March completely in quarantine, that is to say, in every city of the country, in every small village, people are not allowed to leave their houses, to leave their city. They can leave their houses just to go to buy food. Just one family member. There are long queues outside of the supermarket, and the situation is really hard, especially because it's already many days that people live in these conditions, and it's difficult to see when this is going to end and how this situation is going to develop.
So the Italian and the Spanish government have apparently taken some comparable measures. I asked her if the people in Italy are also still adhering to these rules, especially considering that they are in place for quite a while now.
So people are a little bit concerned. There's a bit of uncertainties of this measure are really working, but they still have trust and believe that quarantine is the only way to slow the process of contagion and to help our health system to take care of everybody. So I can tell you that All the people I talk to are following the rules and they are happy that the government took this measure because they feel protected, they feel saved, and they believe that staying home is really the best way to help our health system and especially to help our families and help our older relatives to stay safe. So
Yeah, Italy has been in this stage of lockdown for quite a while now, and I asked Nicole how the Italian economy is handling the current situation.
For the exception of doctor, nurses, military, policemen, or employees in the supermarket, every other person is basically not allowed to go to work. The only way in which work is allowed is working from home. So if you don't belong to a sector where this possibility is allowed, you basically cannot work. So for these families in trouble, for small companies, for independent workers, people who are not able to earn some more money, the government provided 25 billions of euros, which can be extended to a maximum of 50 billions of euros to help these people and these sectors in difficulties to face the economical trouble caused by the coronavirus. As far as I know, in most cases, rents are also paused. So big payments and stuff like that are also imposed in this quarantine phase to help people facing this phase at their best.
People are locked down at home. Obviously, the situation is very stressful, especially if you listen and view the media. I asked Nicole how Italians are feeling at the moment.
People are doing pretty good right now. They follow the rules. They stay home. We saw videos of people dancing and singing in the balconies, trying to give each other some courage, showing a great spirit. So, even though the situation is really hard and people are still very worried, I think the Italian didn't lose the hope that the situation is going to be better.
Now let's move 6,000 kilometers across the Atlantic to the United States. We heard a lot about the United States. President Trump has even forced General Motors to produce ventilators, so it seems like the situation is quite serious. I spoke with Max Egel, who is a lecturer at Princeton University, about the measures the government has taken.
The situation in the United States is relatively frightening, to say the least. I work in Princeton, which is in New Jersey, which is very close to the epicenter in New York. We currently, I think, have 9,000 cases here. The measures that are taken by the government, as well as the state government, are stay-at-home orders, which ban anything except for non-essential travel, as well as a domestic travel advisory for our state, New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut, meaning we cannot move to any other state.
So it seems like there is some uncertainty about which measures to take in the United States. And I spoke with Max about how people are adhering to those rules that are in place already.
The people here do mostly act in accordance with this. However, there is a prevailing trend in the United States to believe in your own personal freedom over any government imposition. And so a lot of people tend to flaunt and ignore this, but this, I think, is a trend which is going down. I think the last big thing was the spring breakers who all went to Florida. This is not the case anymore. I currently work at the university, and the university has been very proactive with their measures and have banned us from the campus earlier than most state advisory has been put out.
So, according to Max, people are understanding how serious the situation is. What does he tell us about the current economic situation?
The country, the economy is in an interesting place at this point. We just released, or the government just released, this giant stimulus package, which we will still see the effects of and whether they will be enough, including this $1,200 check to people earning under $75,000. Currently, and I was in the supermarket this morning, everything seemed fine. Normal life continues as much as possible, except that restaurants and, well, anything of entertainment or personal nature like barbers are all completely closed down. So there's not much to do.
We all know that with 143,000 infected cases, the United States is heavily affected. And I asked Max how he is feeling right now concerning this serious situation, how Americans are feeling in general.
The general feeling, I would say, amongst the people is of fear. Several people I have talked to are very frightful of what is happening, but everybody is doing this social distancing to a certain degree. But there is a prevailing feeling that this could get much worse. The economy of the United States could tank even further. And without a lack of universal health care or any sort of support system for people losing their jobs, there is a fear that the consequences of further economic downturn could really affect all citizens. There's news that people are buying guns, and this is very frightening for someone like me, given that I don't want or own a gun. But yeah, so that is the general feeling in the United States.
So far, the current situation in the United States. Let's move to a country at the American border, to Mexico. And officially, and I believe this is also due to a lack of testing, only approximately 1,000 infected people have been identified in Mexico. I spoke with Rodolfo Benacer Bravo about the current situation and the measures the government of Mexico has taken.
I live in Mexico City. And I do believe that the government has taken some positive action in the matter. First, the government issued to self-quarantine until April to lessen the propagation of the virus and flatten the contagion curve. At the same time, the government will give financial credits to the most vulnerable sector of the population. This is the informal economy. The kind of people that live day by day, that's their income. So I do believe that's great. And only the most necessary jobs are being required to continue laboring until April. Yesterday, the president and the chancellor attended the video conference of the G20, in which they asked the health sector and the health companies to not raise the cost of medical equipment and services. This to solidarize internationally and stop the propagation of the virus.
Now, considering a quite low number, I was wondering if people in Mexico really understand how serious the situation is, and this is what Rodolfo tells us about this.
I can happily inform you that most of the people are self-quarantining, and the only people that are going out on the streets to work are the essential jobs for the economy and the most vulnerable sector, and that's why the president is addressing that issue at the moment.
So, quite serious measures already taken in Mexico. How is the Mexican economy handling the current situation?
Every country in the world, I do believe that most of the markets have a lot of uncertainty right now. We can only hope for the best and follow the rules to confront this virus.
It seems like Mexico really is still in the early stages of this crisis, and I spoke with Rodolfo about how Mexicans are feeling right now.
Feeling in my country right now, I wouldn't say there's a panic, but I also wouldn't say there's a lot of tranquility. I think that there's an in-between, and I think we are there.
All right, now let's move south to the biggest country of South America, to Brazil. And we know that the Brazilian president Jair Bolsonaro still is not really convinced about the severity of COVID-19. I spoke with Larissa Lopez on the measures the government has taken, if they even have taken any measures.
Yeah, Until today, March 28th, we have already 3,904 confirmed cases and 111 confirmed deaths caused by coronavirus in Brazil, and we know that this number is underestimated. Our national government is not actually following the health experts and worldwide trend, and our president continues to minimize the impact of coronavirus in Brazil, often declaring that this is just a little flu and by encouraging citizens to cut their quarantine short. But on the other hand, we have seen a really high preoccupation from mayors and governors, and this has generated a big political fight between the three levels of government, as state governors have decided to ignore the president and maintain the restrictive measures. I am currently living in Rio de Janeiro, the second biggest city in Brazil, and there are already 500 confirmed cases. And we are really worried about the favelas, the slums, as sometimes there's not even running water and the hygiene conditions there are precarious.
I can imagine the situation is difficult for Brazilians right now because apparently their president doesn't really understand how serious this thing might be. And of course, Brazilians also see in the media what is happening all around the rest of the world. So I asked Larissa if Brazilian people are also adhering to the rules or not.
Brazilians are respecting the quarantine. They are respecting the restrictive measures, but this quarantine is very selective. Whoever manages to stay at home while receiving a check, while receiving their wage, okay. But whoever depends on the day's money to eat, they need to leave home and they are living, and we are seeing a lot of elderly people on the streets despite the enforcement to keep them at home.
Brazil also has one of the strongest economies in South America, and I asked Larissa how the Brazilian economy is dealing with the current situation.
So according to Goldman Sachs, the Brazilian stock exchange has the biggest devaluation among the largest stock markets in the world. And to help the poorest citizens, a subsidy meant for informal workers and small business people at around $100 per month for 3 months was passed by the lower chamber of Congress, but it still needs Senate approval. So Brazil's economy is not handling well the situation.
It seems like there is still some confusion in Brazil. I asked Larissa how Brazilians are handling this.
Feeling right now is of tension. We do not know when we will be able to leave home, to go back to a normal life. And on top of that, we are really worried about the economy, and we have the fear of losing our jobs. We do not have a clue about the results of this political fight between the president and almost all the state governors. So we are worried.
Now let's speak about a country in the west of Brazil. Let's speak about Peru, a country that really is not very present in the media when it comes to COVID-19. I spoke with Alejandro Jerónimo Martínez, who is from Lima, and this is what he's got to say about the current situation.
Me encuentro en Lima, la capital de Perú. Lima es la ciudad más afectada en todo el Perú. Hasta ahora en el Perú tenemos...
I am in Lima, the capital of Peru. Lima is the most affected city in Peru, with 852 confirmed cases and 18 deaths. Since March 19, there is a quarantine in Peru. We only may leave the house to buy essential things and only between 5 in the morning to 6 in the evening. So the government has applied quite strict measures in Peru. I've done some research, and it seems like the police is also forcefully trying to make sure that people adhere to these rules. And this is what Alejandro tells us about the current situation.
Peru, hay mucha gente que hace caso, pero también hay mucha gente que no hace caso, y por ende.
Many people act in accordance with the law, but there are some who don't. And that's why the government has taken some drastic measures to control the public, sometimes even applying violence. Before, there have been cases where people acted violently against the military and the police because they didn't want to accept the quarantine. How is Peru's economy dealing with the current situation? This is what Alejandro tells us about this.
El gobierno peruano está apoyando a las familias más pobres del Perú económicamente.
Right now, the government supports the poorest families so that they are able to buy essential things. Moreover, entrepreneurs are supported because they make up for the majority of the Peruvian workforce and they don't earn any money at all at the moment, since everything is closed down. Estimates suggest that the GDP will drop this year by 4.5%. So it feels like the working and the middle class are very, very strongly affected by this crisis. And I asked Alejandro how, let's say, the average Peruvian person really feels right now and how they are coping with the stress that comes along with this crisis. Many are frightened. People don't know when this situation is going to end, and we are also afraid that the essential products might run out. And even if they don't, people might not be able to buy anything since there is no money. So far from Peru and from South America, we are traveling 11,000 kilometers east to Africa, and I spoke with Musa Khalil, who is in Sierra Leone.
My name is Musa Khalil Kouma. I am the founder and executive director of Global Youth Network and Leaders College. I am a Sierra Leonean and I currently live in Freetown, Sierra Leone, West Africa. Sierra Leone has not yet recorded any confirmed case of the coronavirus. However, the government through the president has declared a state of emergency, thereby suspending all flights to and from Sierra Leone, and has closed down the borders between our neighboring countries, Guinea and Liberia, and has as well suspended all public activities and gatherings, which include those of church and mosque. All schools and colleges will close down on the 31st of March, and there has been a restriction on market hours. Our citizens are so far complying with the rules and guidelines by washing of hands and using of sanitizers, etc. The world economy has faced a very serious challenge as there are no international trade going on at the moment, and prices of commodities are hiking very seriously. Sierra Leone wished to stay at zero confirmed case, whilst we continue to pray for the entire world, for this world war to come to an end. Thank you.
So according to Musa, the situation is still quite good in Sierra Leone. Nevertheless, the government has taken some measures. We need to note here that, of course, not every country is applying the same number of tests. And I think this is one big issue in Africa, that many people might be infected with the virus without even noting. So hiking commodity prices in Sierra Leone and therefore huge economic challenges for the African country as well. Now we move to the Middle East, a region that is known for conflicts, a region to a certain extent that is also used to having conflicts. Considering the infrastructure over there, the region is also very vulnerable to the virus. We start with Palestine. I spoke with Basil Al-Madhoun, who is from Palestine, and he tells us about the measures that have been taken by the government and by the authorities.
The situation in Palestine is on lockdown. After finding 50 new cases in the West Bank in the past week and two new cases who went to Gaza through Egypt, and they have infected five security men as well. So a total of seven people infected in Gaza Strip, all of which are under quarantine. The government have taken strict measures both in Gaza Strip and in West Bank. However, not everyone is complying with that. Today they have announced that the new travelers who came to Gaza, which is a group of travels that has been held due to the coronavirus and then were allowed to enter Gaza Strip, have been quarantined in one of the schools. They have not been tested positive, so they all tested negative for coronavirus, which was a big relief for their families and for the citizens of Gaza Strip.
Palestine is a country that is used to lockdowns, especially considering the conflict that is going on for decades with Israel. I asked Basil how the economy is currently handling the situation.
As for the Palestinian economy, it is actually being damaged slowly with this lockdown, as no businesses have opened, the markets, famous markets that open on weekends, on Friday, and on different days during the week have closed, public gatherings have been banned, and thus street travelers and street marketers are not allowed to be existing in the street. This will have a worse impact on the long run. However, one thing that is positive about this that Palestine, both in West Bank and in Gaza Strip, are familiar with different lockdowns due to the nature of the conflict that has been happening for the past years.
We also speak about how Palestinians are feeling right now. We all know that the infrastructure in Palestine is not comparable to what we have in Europe and in the United States, for instance. So I spoke with him on how well the health sector is prepared and how the capacities currently look like.
Palestinians in general are anticipating the time where they can go out of their houses and basically go back to their normal lives. As for the medical situation in Palestine, in Gaza Strip, it's quite difficult to maintain any virus. The equipment and the expertise in Gaza Strip are not enough to meet even a basic standard of health standards. There is about 80 ventilators, 40 of which has already been occupied by different patients from different sicknesses. So if a small epidemic spreads in Gaza, it would be catastrophic. On the nature of the health system, which has been degrading for the past years due to the different conflicts and the different wars that has been waged on Gaza Strip.
So serious political, economic, and of course humanitarian challenges in Palestine. On this occasion, I would like to maybe give a personal statement. I really hope that the climax of this crisis is reached on different times in different countries, which would, of course, free up some capacities to help those countries who are not able to help themselves. Now, let's move to another Arab country at the Persian Gulf, and I'm speaking about Oman. Oman is a country that is well known for beautiful beaches, for luxurious hotels, so the tourism industry plays a big role. I had the chance to speak with Badr Al-Tamami about the measures taken by the Omani government.
The situation right now in Oman is very much like many other places around the world. As we know, about a fourth of the world's population is under some sort of quarantine. And we are actually right now in a sense of not an enforced quarantine, but all major shops, malls, and non-essential business activities were halted. So only pharmacies, orthodontists, and obviously hospitals and supermarkets are open right now. The streets seem empty, and we are in Oman right now trying to flatten the curve as much as possible.
So measures have been taken by the government. Usually people say that in Oman there is quite a big amount of conformity with measures taken by the government. Is that the case as well when it comes to the current COVID-19 situation?
In Oman, there is a high degree of conformity when it comes to abiding by the guidelines set by the government and the Council on Fighting Coronavirus. The people, residents, and locals alike are hand in hand fighting this widespread. And it seems that the economy has gone through a standstill like many other places around the world.
We have already stated that tourism plays a tremendous role for Oman's economy. How is Oman handling the current challenges?
It's like many other places around the world. The economy in Oman is shrinking, for lack of a better word. The occupancy rates in hotels have dropped below 50%, and many other outlets due to the measures enforced to mitigate the spread of the virus have been shut down. So I can't say it's a total seizure of the economy, but we are we are fighting this virus at the expense of the economy, which I believe is a logical and rational thing to do right now.
I also asked Badr how Omanis are feeling right now, and this is what he's got to say about that.
Obviously, I can't speak in the name of the Omani population, but I can tell you about my feelings and people who are around me, friends, family. There's a slight degree of anxiety that's prevalent in this crisis, and people are adjusting. So this is a buffer period in which people left their old lifestyles and the way they used to operate on a day-to-day basis and are slowly but surely easing into a new way of life, which I believe is a challenge, not only for me, but for everyone around the globe.
Oman is in a very important geopolitical spot and usually strongly cooperating with the countries of the Gulf Cooperation Council. I have asked him whether there is some coordination within the GCC when it comes to Corona.
In regards to the cooperation within or intra-cooperation within the Gulf Cooperation Council to fight this virus, as you know that all borders within, I believe, primarily four out of the five GCC countries have been shut. So only passport holders of these countries can come back home. This is not a surprise, and it is also a very wise move to mitigate the spread of the virus and to stop it from spreading across the region. As you know, the infrastructure in the GCC is very advanced in terms of logistics and even the medical infrastructure. We do have good quality hospitals with a lot of beds and a newly but surely very experienced and very professional medical staff.
All right, and last but most certainly not least, we are going to India. India has a population of approximately 1.5 billion people, and there are approximately 1,000 confirmed cases already. I spoke with Aman Johri about the current situation in India and about the measures that have been taken by the government.
Hi, Martin. Glad to be a part of the Good Governance Partnership. These are difficult times, Martin. I'm not going to mince my words. We're really at war. This kind of a global crisis, our generation hasn't seen in its recent history, you know. I personally am from Mumbai. I've got offices in Delhi and Mumbai both, and those are the two biggest cities in the country. Right now, with a population of 1.3 billion people in India, we have 1,100 cases positive for coronavirus 19 as of the morning of 30th March, and we have 27 confirmed deaths. According to the WHO, we're still in phase 2, and India has yet to hit phase 3. We are all hoping they don't, but the way the cases are increasing every day, we need to strengthen our capabilities as a country. The government is trying to get ahead of the curve. They're trying to be proactive. They're all hands on deck. The finance minister announced a stimulus package last week for frontline workers, daily wage workers and laborers. And not just that, even tax relief for the common man, breathing period to file your federal and state taxes and loan foreclosures and stuff like that. So the government has been proactive in their approach. The Prime Minister announced a 21-day lockdown period last Sunday so that we can help flatten the curve, we can help reduce the load on our already fragile healthcare system. And that is where we stand right now, but I personally feel a lot more needs to be done as a community, as a country, as a whole.
Yeah, and we still see pictures of thousands of people on the streets in India, even though it seems like these numbers are declining. And this is what Aman says about how Indians are currently adhering to the rules.
The rule says, the 21-day lockdown period says that everyone has to stay indoors, irrespective of whether you tested positive, you have symptoms, or you're completely healthy. And that's how you stop the spread of this virus, right, this deadly disease. And people in generally, yes, they are following the rules. We have the Prime Minister come and speak to us once every 3 or 4 days about how dangerous the situation is and how bad it can really get, how it can spiral out of control. And that's the kind of inspiration we need from our leadership, to come and speak to the public almost every day. Justin Trudeau does that with Canada quite a lot. In fact, even Donald Trump holds a press conference every day about COVID-19. And we need more inspiring leadership to come and speak to the people, to guide them in these difficult times. Yes, I would say a majority of them are following the rules. You know, other than getting essentials like groceries and medical supplies, people don't really go out. You nominate one person from the family to go out and get this stuff for the house, and then you sanitize everything, including your clothes and everything else, as soon as you enter the house. And that's what we're trying to do.
Obviously, India is also an important driver for the world economy, and I asked Aman how the Indian economy is handling the current situation.
Well, Martin, the economy has taken a hit, as has the global economy. India is no different. We actually had to stop stock trading twice last week for our two biggest boards, that's Nifty and Sensex, because you know, the market started and fell way beyond the threshold point of healthy trading. The Reserve Bank of India slashed the repo rate for all state and federal banks to help, you know, liquidate cash flows better. We need a lot of healthy foreign reserve to even liquidate in the near future. In fact, not just that, India is a country that is built on SMEs. It's built on small and medium enterprises. And there can be economic relief packages for the big companies, you know, for the big industrial companies. But it's, I think, more than financial help is needed in the coming few quarters for the SMEs to, you know, help get them back into positive growth rate. You have, other than the daily wage workers, other than the essential supplies, most businesses are mostly shut, right? And in fact, me belonging to aviation personally, even we have a skeletal staff that barely works. Flights are being shut. Domestic travel is reduced to negligible and zero. So to bounce up from this, you know, it's going to take a while. I would say that around a year, year and a half is the kind of period it will take to get out of this situation. Not just for India, even for other countries, even for largely agrarian economies, it's going to take a while.
1.5 billion people live in India, so I can imagine that still the streets might be quite crowded. I asked Aman how Indians are feeling right now.
Well, you know, Martin, we are scared. We are no different as the rest of the world is. But I personally believe that the tipping point is when panic sets in. And that must be avoided at all costs. You know, there must be enough awareness with the people to know that there is no reason to panic. There's all the reason in the world to take this disease seriously, to take this issue seriously. And it's on us, the healthy and young people, to take care of the older citizens of the community, the pregnant women, the younger children, the people with serious medical health conditions, you know, who are more prone to this, who are more at risk. And we are all eagerly waiting for a cure and to, you know, mass produce that at a large scale to be distributed across the world. You need a good supply chain. You need sturdy economics to function all across the world. Trade and you know, transport needs to be functioning effectively. And to reach that stage, I think we have some time. I think we need to give the doctors and the healthcare workers and professionals and researchers who are working on this cure day and night, who are working on curing symptoms and working on recovery cases, you know, we need to give them all the support and encouragement that we can from our side, sitting in our homes, of course. And by the end of it all, Martin, I hope you're safe. I hope you and your family are safe. Everyone listening to this, I hope you're taking all the precautions necessary to prevent you, yourself, your family, your community, and your country from, you know, being a victim to this crisis. It's really on us whether we want to be safe or whether we want to be a statistic. So all that said and done, Martin, thank you so much for this opportunity. And I hope we all as a community come out of this more resilient, wiser than before, and smarter in our decisions in the future. Thanks, Martin.
All right, guys, that's it for now. Thank you very much for tuning in. I would like to thank each and everybody who has contributed to this episode. And I would like to give you a brief outlook on what you can expect for the next few weeks from us. So in the next week, we will speak about the impact of corona on regions of crisis. We've heard about Peru, for instance. We've heard about Palestine. And we will have conversations with people who know about the situation in Yemen and in Syria, for instance. Don't miss any episode from us. Click the like button and hit subscribe. And I'm looking forward to seeing you soon. Thank you very much for tuning in. My name is Martin El-Khoury, and this is the Good Governance Partnership.